There is so much more going on in the world, and it's the news, according to me. Well, I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. I've got background music. I thought I had my headphones in. Apparently, my system here is not using the headphones that I have on. So I'm just all you're going to get is the weird sound, probably of hearing what you're hearing as you're hearing it. Now, I had a show late last night, and I was going to have a show early this morning, but there was an appointment that kind of got jostled around, and I had to deal with some administrative things this morning that, of course, if you listened to last night's show, you know that I don't like administrative stuff. But I had to deal with some things this morning to verify that the meeting had been changed, the time had been changed. Otherwise, I would have been late for the meeting if they didn't actually change it, but if they did actually change it, then it was actually changed. And so I just had to verify it was changed, and it was changed. So it's now I know it's changed. That was a lot of work. So this whole thing with Kevin McCarthy has been going on, and it's been an interesting battle, if you will. Now, the Republicans love it when Manchin is the holdout, or Sinema is the holdout in the Senate. And they love it when they see the Democrats have, you know, now the Democrats don't yell around and scream, oh, we're so embarrassed by this, it's so embarrassing, that we're in turmoil, we're in chaos, we're not in lockstep, we have two people who don't agree with the rest of us, so we have to, you know, of course, you hear them say all kinds of malicious things against them when that stuff like that happens, because a lot of times, Sinema and Manchin were the two holdouts, one or the other, or both. Typically, Manchin was more the, because he comes from a much more conservative state. Traditional Democrat state. And the problem that he runs into is that, you know, he's got the pressure from legislation committees, all the things that, you know, that they're doing to him behind the scenes under the table, the way they treat him by the party, by the Democrat Party, not the Democratic Party, because they're not Democratic at all. They are Democrats. I know that I mince on this a lot. I do talk about this a lot. Almost every show I bring up the fact that so many pundits, so many people will say Democratic Party, the Democratic candidate, they're not a Democratic. In fact, I actually heard someone say this the other day. He's a Democratic. That's what they actually said that. Now, they kind of were in the middle of saying something very quickly, and he's a Democratic. No, he's a Democrat. Democratic is a process. Democrat is a pronoun. I hate to get off on that tangent all the time, but that's what I'm looking at. So Manchin gets in this thing where he's being kind of he gets himself into a position where he's the lone dissenter, the lone voter, which gives him some political clout or power in a situation, right? Whether it's him or two of him or three or four of the Democrats who are pushing back on the agenda from the left. They're in a minority, but that gives them some clout. It gives them some power because of the balance of power right now is so tedious in Congress. So in the Senate, all you have to have is a couple of holdouts. You see, if it's 50-50, and they can't come up to a vote, what ends up happening is the vice president steps in, the vice president of the executive branch, the Kamala, steps in, and she is the swing vote. She can decide one way or the other. So she's the decider. So you could say that she's the holdout. She's, you know. Now, if there's 49 people, Kamala can't break that. So if Manchin decides he's not going to vote for something, it gives him that political power, that political leverage, the pivot point, if you will. It all rests on his shoulders. Now, you could say that it rests on every single one of their, any other person who, you know, it rests on all their shoulders. Well, it kind of does, but when it comes down to that one last dissenting vote, right now we have 20 dissenting votes. And in fact, one of them, there's several, there's only, it would only take about four people, I think, he needs 16 more votes, I think. I think it only takes four dissenters. With four dissenters, I think he could make it. With five, I don't think he can. I haven't worked out the math yet, but I know it's a very small number of people. There's a very slim margin that they have a slim majority in the House right now. So he really needs that. Because there's a certain number, I think it's 218, that he needs to pass. Joaquim has 213. And so it's a very difficult thing. Now, I'm listening to a lot of other news sources besides just Fox News. Excuse me. And none of them, I'm listening to Newsmax, Fox News, OEN, all these different alternative news networks besides the legacy networks. And none of them, not even MSNBC or CNN, are talking about something this morning that just kind of amazes me. And that is, what's in my cup? I have some water still in my bottle, which is apparently what I need more of this morning because my throat is a little raspy. It keeps developing this little bit of a rasp. So, I also have in my thermos, I still have a little bit of V8 Fusion and apple cider. So I got that going for me. Now, on with some more important things. Well, not necessarily more important, just less interesting things, I guess. I know that that's why most of you tune in, just to find out what's in my cup. So I have, I was successful the other day, by the way, in stalling what was in my cup. I kept teasing it for about 16 minutes, I think, or something like that. I actually got a comment from somebody mentioning that they made them wait 16 minutes before they found out what was in my cup. You noticed. So I have this. The issue right now is that this is a normal part of the process, and you don't hear people flipping out, calling them an embarrassment, calling them terrorists. You know, this is, you want to talk about how the Democrats rule and lead their party. When you have somebody like Dan Crenshaw coming out and saying the things he's saying against these holdouts, you know, they're not just going to go along to get along. And I don't think it's necessarily about anything about Kevin McCarthy being a bad person. But you've got people on the right are saying, well, you know, you got to get him in there. We got to get legislating. We got to get going because we want to protect the border. We want to stop the, we want to fix the economy and do all these things. They may have a list about 5 or 10 things that they're going to fix with the country that's all wrong with the country. you mean like, so Congress has more power than the president now? How exactly are you going to get this stuff done when you're not going to be able to get it through the Senate? And you're not going to be able to get it through Joe Biden's veto. This, first of all, they're acting like they have a lot more power and control. They think, by the way, that our life depends on them. And here again is the problem with the swamp. This is the problem with actually the establishment in general. They just think that their jobs are so important and they're protecting the American people. And it's just a fine line between losing our democracy and them being in office. Because if someone else is in office, well, we've lost our democracy. Nobody can run it like I run it. See, this is their mentality. They are self-aggrandized, political theater. But talk about being tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. These people are just follow whatever political football is convenient at the moment. And I have to say, it gets very, very tiresome. By the way, congratulations. We have a Republican who just, he's not going to be in office next year. And I'd like to congratulate him. He got a new job. He's got a very lucrative job position that I would never have seen coming, by the way, even though I might have mentioned it on my show a few times. Last night, the announcement was made that for the first time, a particular individual has had his debut, or debut, as I call it, on MSNBC as a senior political analyst. His name is Adam Kinzinger, former Republican in name only. He's now been announced as having a position, very prestigious position now. Now, he was working voluntarily before. Now he's working actually on paid staff now. Good for you, Adam. You can cry on their channel all you want. Oh, but he's a staunch Republican. He's a Republican. Yeah. You know, it amazes me. The news media, there's this guy named Chris Temp? What is his name? He's supposedly a cyber analyst who was involved in the 2020 election. He's also involved in the 2016 election. This guy, and I've mentioned him before. I think I've even played a video of him, or I know I've played audio of him in a House hearing, or it's actually a Senate hearing, where he was giving testimony about how the election was done and how the things are tabulated and how what happens with the cyber issue of the elections. Now, this guy, I know that I've seen this guy in the past. Back in the 90s, I don't know where this guy is from. I have the feeling he changed his name. Because he only gets interviewed. Nobody on Fox News ever interviews the guy. He's only on CNN and MSNBC. Yeah, I think he has been on NBC, some of the Sunday morning shows. He may have even been on Chris Wallace's show. Oh, remember Chris Wallace? Does anybody remember Chris Wallace? Remember when he used to have a show? Remember when he was actually given the time of day until he got hired by CNN? And then he kind of went away. He's kind of done. Good job, Chris. You and Adam maybe can get together and have a little cry together. So, where was I? I don't even remember what I was talking about now. So Adam Kinzinger has this job now with that. Oh, this Christ guy, or whatever his name is. I don't know what his name is. He's supposedly this cyber expert who has continued to come out and talk about cyber. And I've seen him in the news again recently. He was just being interviewed again recently, and that's kind of why I brought him up. But these are the kind of people that you can almost tell where they're at in the political spectrum. Now, supposedly, and the reason I bring him up is because supposedly he was a Republican. He was working under the Bush administration, actually. George W., not H.W. And I'm pretty sure he was working in his administration at some point. And I think the latter part of his administration. I think he also worked into the Obama administration a little bit. However, the crazy, weird thing about this is how he never, you know, you never hear him talk about supporting Republican candidates. And again, this is the whole crux of the issue of you will know them by their fruits kind of thing. Why would Adam Kinzinger, this supposed Republican, no, I think Joy, was it Joy? Not Joy Reid. What's her name? There's a gal that used to be on The View I think she's Hispanic. She would talk about, she's Puerto Rican, I believe. I was a Republican. I'm a Republican. She always talks about this. But she never, ever goes along with anything the Republicans talk about. Any issue, she's always on the left of it. And I think she was a Republican for about 5 minutes. Now, Joe Scarborough was also, he ran as a Republican back in the 90s or early 2000s, whatever it was. Until the incident where a young lady died in his office of a head wound. Yeah. Tucker Carlson has actually pushed pretty hard on that issue. He hasn't recently, but he has in the past. Speaking of Tucker, last night, he was really, really pushing on the idea that Kevin McCarthy needs to do his job, win a coalition and not threat. You can tell whose side he's on in this whole thing. And it's not along the talking points of Fox News. Because almost everybody else in Fox News, there is one other pundit, I can't think of his name right now, Charlie somebody. He has been on and actually has been very, very, center of the road on this whole thing. He's just basically laid out the case for Kevin McCarthy to say, Kevin needs to, the biggest issue they have is on budget. Now, it is. The issue, there's a big issue on budget. But there's also the issues of investigations. And even though Kevin McCarthy has promised certain things and he's saying different things are going to come to the table, they don't want a token vote on things. If they cave into Kevin McCarthy now, what's going to end up happening is they know how he is. He is a swamp creature. Matt Gaetz came out and said, if you want to drain the swamp, you can't have the head alligator, the largest alligator, sitting in, running the show. And those are pretty strong words. Now, we might be seeing, because I think it's called the Freedom Caucus, I think is what it is. That's a part of this whole thing. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, one thing I want to get into this morning, which is why I want to talk about this whole thing, is President Trump in the middle of this. President Trump has come out in support of Kevin McCarthy being the speaker. Now, you have to, I think, put yourself in the shoes of Trump and in his mindset. It is better for the Freedom Caucus if Trump does not come out and support them. Right now, they can't blame Trump. I mean, politically, this is the best position he can take. He's very clear about why he's supporting Kevin McCarthy. Let's just move ahead. Get the job done, put McCarthy in as speaker. There's a reason for this. I don't think it's that Trump necessarily trusts Kevin McCarthy or that he thinks he's the best speaker of the House. But he knows that they will just blame this on MAGA. They will, in fact, attack the individuals. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, in fact, is one person who has actually come out and spoken that she supports Kevin McCarthy. Now, I don't know if you've noticed body language and some other things regarding the way certain individuals interact between sessions in the House. I'll get to that in a minute. But getting back to this whole thing with Trump, I think that he's putting himself in a position where both for himself politically and for the sake of those who are opposing Kevin McCarthy, I think it is almost imperative that he not be on a side that would be seen as not with the establishment or not GOP. Friendly right now, because it puts people like Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz, those individuals who are, there's like 20 of them, who are opposing Gates right now. Gates lost votes in the last go-around. They're not going to budge. There's at least 16 of them that are not going to budge. More people are going over to their side, especially the more they realize by principle alone, and I think that even though the pundits are saying, oh, the American people are upset with this, they want to see us get on with the work of governing and getting gas prices down and doing all these other things. Really? How do you really plan on doing that? Can you tell us exactly how you're going to do all these things that you keep saying, we need to get in the business of getting all this, we need the border taken care of, and how exactly are you going to do that? Congress isn't in charge of the border. You haven't talked about defunding the FBI. You haven't talked about defunding Homeland Security or putting money up for the border. And even if you did, Senate isn't going to vote for it. So exactly, we basically have a lame duck Congress right now. And it's almost as if this fact that we have no speaker is kind of like God saying something to us. Sometimes, I want to get into this a little bit. I don't want to take it too far. You can take this kind of thing a little too far. Sometimes circumstances or occurrences, things that happen, just little things sometimes that happen, even. Not necessarily the big things, but sometimes it's the big things that happen. And people will make statements, and it's like, that's what God is trying to tell us right now. There's no speaker in the House. There's no voice in the House. There's ways that sometimes I think God speaks to us as a nation, as a group, as a people, and sometimes even as individuals, but that we miss all the time through circumstances. Now, I'm not saying that every little thing that happens is necessarily that we can interpret and say, well, that's God saying something. I think sometimes he's trying to get our attention, though. And sometimes he is trying to say something to us. And he will use the icons of society sometimes, I think, to try to, he'll use anything he can to communicate with us. I was thinking about this the other day. Words. Words themselves. Now, we know that God's word, he puts his word above his name. If there's nothing more powerful, there's nothing more important than God's word. However, words themselves cannot at all come close to describing or containing the goodness and greatness of God. However, words in and of themselves are at least something that he knows we can wrap our little brains around and try to understand. Give us some kind of, when you want to talk about the goodness of God, how you can say God is good. That is not even, that doesn't even come close to describing his goodness. That's like it's not even a drop in a bucket to express how good God is. The mere weakness of words, our words especially, and I think that it goes beyond our little brains are. Now, I'm not diminishing his word at all, but by saying this, I'm saying it's his word is above his name, and his name is above every other name. So it's his word. If it's because of the reason that he says that in Scripture is because if your word isn't good, then your name isn't good. So your word better be true, or your name isn't any good. So your word is actually above your name. And in the midst of this, but words are all we have. I think there might have been a song about this at one point. I don't have the words, but words are all I have to describe, this. We just can't fathom, we can't wrap our little brains around the indescribable nature of who God is. And I think that kind of sense of awe, I think, is missing sometimes in that child. It's almost like a childlikeness, a sense of wonder. I think as we grow older, we become a little bit more cynical, a little bit more skeptical of things. We lose that childlike sense of wonder about life sometimes. I've known some people who were older, in their 60s and 70s, who still had this kind of childlikeness about them. A sense of simple life, enjoying the little things in life. You know, life wasn't all about them and their issues. They were real in every sense of the word, and they were also very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? When you talk about minimalism today, that's a big deal. Minimalist, it's minimalist. I'm a minimalist. All these people on YouTube who just, you know, off camera, they got all their camera gear, they got all their crap, and they show themselves waking up on a cot. I'm a minimalist. All I have is this and my toothbrush. I just have this cot and my toothbrush, and I live on this. Boy, I have 6 million followers, and I've got a mansion over there across the street. But I live in this little apartment. This is where I film my videos over here. The minimalist mentality is one of the true minimalist is one who doesn't carry all their emotional, sociological baggage around. And you can see other people because you don't have your arms full of yourself. When that starts to happen, folks, I stand around in crowds of people quite often. And it becomes very difficult to sometimes very difficult to and I guess the most difficult part of it is that you have to wonder, you know, everybody has a story. You know, as you're, say you're standing around in an airport and there's, you know, several hundred people standing around in the area. Just to know that, you know, God is at work in every single one of those people's lives. He's trying to speak to every single individual in that place. Now you think about the 8 billion people that are on the earth. But he's intimately involved in every single person's life in that place. And sometimes it's overwhelming to look around the room and see where, you know, just wonder what's going through the minds of those people. What is happening there? What kind of struggles they're having? What kind of concerns they're carrying? What kind of questions do they have in their mind? What brings them joy? What, you know, all these different things, all the things about that, those individuals that are in that room. It's overwhelming, you know, sometimes when you think about how much God is involved in all those things. And yet, through the little circumstances in someone's life, just say something, you know, your pencil falls on the floor. Sometimes I think in the midst of that, God is trying to tell us something. Now, you can speculate, postulate, propagate, Watergate, all kinds of, you can do all kinds of things that kind of make up something. I've seen people, it's been interesting. Well, I'm on this subject. It's in the past, there's been times where, you know, somebody's had a word spoken over them or somebody prayed something over them and spoke something in that prayer that, you know, well, that's just a confirmation to something that I think God was calling me to do. Be very careful with that. Sometimes we're looking for a confirmation. In fact, I had a friend of mine a while back. He said, you know, he was kind of disappointed because he felt like God let him down. And you know, he had this person prophesy over him one time that he said that God said he was going to give him more than he could imagine. Beyond what, I think specifically the way it was said, it was beyond what he could imagine or what he could think of or imagine. Well, now in this guy's mind, he thought, well, I want all this stuff, so God wants to give me more stuff than I can even imagine. No, the problem is you're thinking of the stuff, you can't imagine the things he wants to give you. Does that make sense? Do you understand where I'm going with this? Are you tracking with me here? It wasn't stuff he wants to give you. The problem is you can't imagine anything beyond the stuff. But in his mind, it was, well, that's the stuff I want. So apparently he's going to give me more than I can imagine of that stuff. This is where we go many times as believers. And I think it's a very critical point in that we need to hold on loosely sometimes to some of the things that we believe God is saying to us. Hold fast to his truth, his promise, his ways, his word. But at the same time, be very careful about how we interpret what we believe God is saying to us. Because maybe he meant it in a different way. And but I've seen this happen many times. A friend of mine was looking at his whole ministry was going to change. And he was taking he had a small church. He had actually a pretty powerful ministry. Even though the church was small, it was a very powerful ministry. And someone prayed over him, and he'd been talking to this other person. He hadn't been talking to anybody else in the group, anybody else in his church. And he'd been talking to someone else about this merger to take place with another church. This was back in the 80s. And someone prayed over him, prayed a prayer, and he said, "You've just confirmed some things to me." Didn't say what it was, didn't say what the specifics were. But this just confirmed some things that, you know, this is where God's taking us. So this is what we're going to do. Now, I offered up several questions in the midst of the, once it was finally announced that what was happening, I said, well, maybe he meant this or this or this. Did you ever stop and think that maybe these are the things he meant? Or they could have, you know, you could be interpreting this four different ways, or probably more than that, but there are four main ways it could be interpreted. Other than the one he interpreted it as. Nope, this is it. This is the way it's supposed to be. That ministry didn't last more than about 6 months later. He was, within a year, he was extremely disappointed, extremely frustrated, realized that he had been duped in the midst of it all. Maybe he realized he'd been duped. I never really had much of a discussion with him about it afterwards, other than just to say that I think it's the wrong decision. And probably by saying that, I probably jinxed him or constrained him into fighting back and saying, I will never admit that I made a mistake. Because that's the way people are sometimes. Especially his personality type would be the type that would never admit that he made a mistake. Which again, gets back to some self-awareness issues. We need to be sensitive to those kinds of things. Now, getting back to this whole body language thing. I see this occasionally on the House floor. Now, the other day I saw a particular House of Representatives person talking to, it was a female, talking to a male, I believe it was actually Kevin McCarthy. I think she's married. Now, I have to say, the starry-eyed look that she had in her eyes and the way she spoke to him and the body posture and language that she had in speaking to him was quite alarming. If I had been her husband, or if this man's, if Kevin McCarthy's wife would have seen the way this woman was talking to him, if she had any clue at all. It was very, I would have been very uncomfortable having a woman talk to me like that, looking at me that way and acting the way she was acting. Now, she wasn't being touchy, she wasn't being feely, but there was a definite starry-eyed look that she had. And it really, it was almost uncomfortable for me to watch. Now, McCarthy seemed to be eating it up. He wasn't reciprocating necessarily, but he was loving the starstruck mentality around him. See, people have a tendency to buffer themselves, put people, when they get in positions of power like this, they put people around themselves that are yes men, they put themselves in a bubble, this protective comfort zone, where they can lord over other individuals, people will kowtow to them, they never hear anybody say no to them. And that's the position that they want to be in. They want to be the right, they want to be the big tough leader in the room when everybody around them is the followers. And sometimes that's the kind of people we need in those situations. But in other situations, not so much. Now, as we press into the days ahead and see what happens with the here in the House and everything that's going on, I just want to reiterate that we need to continue to pray for each other, pray for our nation, our leaders, our families, and my bumper music, which is coming in, getting louder and louder. Folks, a couple more days left. Tomorrow morning will be a show, live show tomorrow morning, not sure what time. It'll either be 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. I'm hoping to do it at 8 o'clock if everything works well. If it's not on until 9 o'clock, that means I had problems. God bless everybody. Have a great evening. Great day. Take care.